This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake them ropes. Jeff Hawkins here, along with Chris Novembrino.
Hi, kids.
Today, just a quick plug. Those of you who are Patreon subscribers got an extra special surprise treat. Myself and Rob McCarron talking mostly baseball, a subject I know nothing about. But for one measly dollar, you can hear me and him talk a little wrestling sandwiched by some baseball talk there. It's shakethemropes.com or patreon.com/shakethemropes. Chris, news coming out of California. A couple woke up to look at their Ring video and notice that a man had been licking their doorknob doorbell for three hours. What kind of drug makes one want to lick a doorbell?
I don't even know. I bet you it's some like weird combination drug, but I've been down on these Ring doorbells. I was really alarmed by the new thing that Google was coming out with, where they want to be able to actually scan the delivery driver's face and tell them who the delivery driver's face is. But this is the other side of Ring doorbells. I do kind of want to know if someone's showing up and just licking my house. I can understand wanting to know about that.
Yeah, that's something I've never heard of, you know, and now that every time I close my door, it's weird. I'll tell you one thing. I'm putting that on my Tinder profile if I ever
that you don't lick doorbells, like that you have no Ring reports.
I can lick a doorbell for 3 hours. I mean, I'm guaranteed at least one swipe right.
You got to be careful. That people might read that as some sort of code.
So we have a little Raw, a little SmackDown. I'm going to start with the Hulk Hogan thing. I am of...
Where are you at on the Hulk Hogan thing?
I'm in a number of different places, as I am in most things. People have every right to be angry. I do not deny people's anger at all. I think if they are deeply offended, though, I think it is up to them to walk away rather than stamp their feet and expect the company to bend to their whims. If you are deeply offended, it is on you, and the bravest thing you can do is walk away with your money, because they're not going to care, and you can walk away knowing with a clear conscience. Because, look, my friend Brian, who's been on the show, used to write for With Spandex, Brian O'Connell. When the Saudi Arabia thing hit, he goes, "That's it, I'm done. I'm done with this company." And while I might disagree with him on some of the nuances of the situation, I respect the hell out of him for walking with his money and going elsewhere. If you are that deeply offended by Hulk Hogan coming back for the death of his friend, despite everything that Hogan said, you should walk. And I have no problem with that either, because WWE is a crap company. They've been doing this kind of crap for years. Now, that said, I told you I had a very bad analogy about this.
Yeah, I want to hear this bad analogy.
Michael Corleone let Fredo come back for his mom's funeral. That did not mean that everything was cool with the family. That did not mean that Michael Corleone was not eventually going to kill Fredo. Spoiler alert, Godfather Part 2. It did not mean all was well. It did not mean they were brothers again. It did not mean that they were hugging, smiling, happy family again. It just meant mom's death is kind of important. We're allowing him back for this time, but everything's not cool. That's the way I viewed this. I understand people's cynicism about, well, you know what this is going to mean. That means he's back and happy, and they're going to use this for marketing and all this other stuff. I just thought it, you know what, maybe there's a certain sect of people that, while their anger is duly noted, kind of have to relax a little bit, because Mean Gene's very important to the history of the WWE. Hulk Hogan and Mean Gene are linked at the hip in terms of careers, I think you kind of have to, you know, give a little leeway here if you're not completely offended. You can be angry, but at the same time, you have to understand what's going on here.
So I was talking with my friend about an hour and a half to 2 hours before the show, and I stated to him my opinion that if Hulk Hogan could somehow show up on Monday Night Raw and make this about the importance of his interactions with Mean Gene and how Mean Gene was really important for his career, and not make it about Hulk Hogan and somehow transcend himself a little bit, if only for a moment, I would be okay with him doing this. But I had deep, deep reservations that he had the ability to do that. And I guess I'll preface this with saying that I think Hulk Hogan sucks as a person, and he's not admirable, and there's nothing to like about this guy. Even before all the more high-profile stuff, there's been just a litany of horrible Hulk Hogan stories. I mean, Hulk Hogan's the ultimate liar.
Yes.
So all of that said, I thought that Monday night went about as good as it possibly could have went. I thought that Terry Bollier managed to actually be Terry Bollier for a moment there, and that there was a moment of something real buried in all of that Hulk Hogan-y bullshit that drives me crazy about him. And I thought that the way the segment was sequenced out was about Gene, and it wasn't about Hogan, and it wasn't allowed to be about Hogan. And Hogan knew that and respected that and made sure that this was about Gene. I didn't have a problem with this, but I don't like Hulk Hogan. It didn't change my mind about Hulk Hogan in the slightest.
My opinions of Hulk Hogan are very well known. I hate the guy. Never liked him as a wrestler. Never really liked WWF all that much, to be honest with you. I'm going to push back a little bit. I thought it was about a 50% of a good tribute. I thought the music video was great. I would have liked a little bit of AWA stuff mixed in there to give the complete history, but I understand they are not obligated to do that as a company. I get that. But that promo, it was just a little bit too full of the WWE corporate speak. Let me tell you all, guys, he liked nothing more than to entertain you all. It was about Gene, but then that last promo about name-dropping all these dead people that are...
You know, that was actually uncomfortable for me.
Yes,
it was actually kind of painful to think about how all of these figures from my childhood met untimely ends. Gene's the only one who lived out, like, a full lifespan, but, like, you know, Kurt Hennig died, how old is he, 42, 43? Macho was, like, right around 60, and it was actually kind of weird and eerie to see Hogan standing as the cheese that stands alone, maybe other than Flair, from that era.
Yeah, I was a little upset that, I don't know if Flair was unable to make it, but I thought maybe both of them giving a tribute would have been a nice touch. I understand why they didn't do that either. I found that part a bit weird. I think, you know, occasionally we can bring the room down a little, and we can have a real moment and a real speak. And that was my major issue, was it didn't feel like Hogan speaking from the heart about his friend Mean Gene.
I don't think he was allowed to speak fully on that. I actually felt like Terry wanted to say more right there, and Terry wasn't allowed to say more. So that's what I was saying. Like, they kept the reins on him. I mean, I actually like the Michael Corleone Fredo thing. Like, they really corralled him, but I thought Hogan colored inside the lines as best he could.
Yeah, I could do without ever seeing Hulk Hogan on television.
No, I don't ever need to see him again. He doesn't like that. I was fine
unless
with that.
Unless someone else dies, that I need. Unless when Vince McMahon passes away, he can come back. I have no.
Here's
problem
my
with that.
Thing. Gene and Hogan were pretty good friends, in real life. Yeah, I mean that's the other thing. And so I mean you can hate Hulk Hogan, and you're fine for hating Hulk Hogan. Not just you, but like anyone, the broader you. But yes. You got to remember to Gene Okerlund. Terry Bollier is a lifelong friend who he loved. And so, I mean, you know, you've got to operate within those confines, too, when you're looking at this.
Yeah, I didn't need real American blasting and stuff. I understand why they did. It's to get the big pop and things like that. But, you know, a solemn moment would have been cool, too. What else was I thinking? Oh, yeah, my one snarky comment was, me and Gene loved nothing more than entertaining you fans. I go, well, me and Gene did like liquor a lot. He might have liked that a little bit more. It was fine. But I really liked the video tribute. I thought that was a nice...
That was really well done. I mean, the video team does a really good job when they are allowed to kind of put that stuff together.
So, in addition to all that, I'm going to put over our deconstruction of Mean Gene. I know a lot of other shows did the whole he was a great straight man thing. I did not hear anybody, and you know me, I'm one of the fiercest critics. If I think I did a crap job on this show, I think we did a hell of a job breaking down what made Mean Gene a great straight man. I'm very proud of that piece of audio. So if you guys want to listen to it, go back to our year in review. Listen to that part of it. I thought Chris knows more improv theory than I knew, because he said some things that I was like, yes, that's exactly it. How did you know that's what I was thinking? So I thought that was some great audio. But we are on the road to the Royal Rumble, Chris. Where do you want to start?
Where do you want to start? I mean, we can start with Raw. We can start with, how did this show open off? Well, we kicked off with that brawl. Well, and the brawl between Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley that kind of had a wraparound effect as well.
I found this Raw weird in a lot of ways. I thought the wrestling was good. The pacing of the whole thing was kind of... And then there were some...
We're trying new things to weave in between the matches and the promos. And we saw a little bit more of that on SmackDown tonight, too, with Daniel Bryan coming out through the crowd. We're trying new things. I'll give him credit for that.
I think they had surrendered. I think they had pretty much surrendered to the national title game for the most part, which is understandable. The other thing that I found odd was, despite all these long, pretty... good matches, I thought the matches, with the possible exception of the Elias match, and there were a couple of hiccups in the Sasha Banks Nia Jax match, some of the endings, though, it was like they're almost on the cusp of writing smarter characters, but they can't help themselves sometimes. You know, and that carried over a little bit to SmackDown as well. But John Cena is on Raw because he can go wherever he pleases. He has not yet punched his ticket to WrestleMania again. We're going with that thing. We get a 6-man tag with him, Seth Rollins, and Finn Balor, who... I don't know. Is this a push for Finn Balor? Because I can't tell anymore.
I don't know if the way they opened up this show was really all that helpful. Like, I liked the Drew and Cena interaction, and I was really feeling that. I actually wanted to see them feuded up. And
yeah.
Then I liked the big spillover brawl thing. But that should be a thing where that match gets put off for a couple of hours, and you weave a little story through it rather than just have it immediately turn into a match.
I would agree. I think there's some point to that there, but I also think, I think Royal Rumble plans, and I think the build to who's going to be the guy at Mania may be playing into this, so they don't want to necessarily give away singles matches here. The 6-man, the other side, Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, and Dean Ambrose. I thought everything except the ending was kind of cool here. The ending was kind of weird, where Dean just comes in, ha, gotcha, curb stomp, 1, 2, 3, and you're like, huh, okay. But overall, fun match, long match, kind of we're in kind of a time killing thing here, I think, because of the national title game. I did like Leo Rush. I'm going to get a lawyer. I'm like, yep, here we are. Office politics and lawyers. That's what brings it up. But the other part, of course, after this, Seth Rollins goes and slaps coffee out of Triple H's hand and goes, "How'd you like that?" And he gets a title match. I was like, okay, cool. There's your story.
Yeah, I am here for pro se litigant Leo Rush, though. I think that there's a fun storyline there to be explored.
I liked the Revival tag team title match.
Yeah, I liked it too. I was thinking, here's a random thought from this. I was thinking that they need to figure out a way to explain why it's called the Lumberjack match without invoking wrestling, I guess. I don't understand why they don't explain what a lumberjack match is or why it has its origins in the word lumberjack. But I have to imagine for people who don't understand that, it's just weird. Like, why are these people being called lumberjacks?
Yeah, they used to do that on, I think it was the AWA TV all the time, where it's like, yep, if you had a problem on a lumberjacking thing, all the lumberjacks would circle around so one guy couldn't get away. And then, you know, that kind of thing. I liked that the Lumberjacks did not break down into a brawl.
Yes.
That was my favorite part of that, where that those rules of that reality were not skirted. But
you know, the other thing I like about the Lumberjacks, too, is that they become visual witnesses to the Revival getting screwed over. So it becomes this injustice that the entire tag division saw before their very eyes.
Yeah, I'm trying to still process that loss a bit, because I understand the story they're building here is that the Revival keep on losing through no fault of their own. At the same time,
it leaves Rude and Gable in a weird nowhere's land.
I think that the Revival, being tag team specialists, should know the rule book backwards and forwards and special, you know, loopholes and things like that. I think this is where also it's fine for them to be angry. I loved the idea of a Jim Cornette-like figure, even if it wasn't Jim Cornette, being a manager, so he could go ape all over the official and, you know, maybe do a little shoving between the two of them, since wrestlers and referees shouldn't shove each other, you know, to really get over how angry and how screwed these guys were, rather than just kind of holding their head and, you know, shrugging their shoulders. Have that third guy really go kind of apoplectic on a referee and the officials and even the powers that be in the back, you know, the general manager figure, whoever, kind of thing. I think that's another reason why the Revival really need that third person out on the outside.
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily getting the full effect from the Ascension, feeling like this was a grand injustice. I guess that's the other side of the coin of the Lumberjacks. Although I do like the Lumberjacks as a device for this. It's
yes.
Good to have eyewitnesses, and a lot of them.
Yeah, the Ascension were like, no, we had the foot on the ropes. I'm like, good on you guys. Keep the reality there.
Yeah.
So we have a women's number one contender on the Raw side. It is Sasha Banks who will be facing Ronda Rousey. I found this a little interesting. I know that Ronda really respects the heck out of Sasha. I'm hoping it plays into this build for the tag title belts. There's still that possibility that this includes a horsewoman angle throughout the Royal Rumble. The Nia Jax stuff, I think, was a bit heavy-handed. I still don't know what Alexa Bliss is, other than maybe a plot device now. I don't know if she's ever going to wrestle again. I know that she's trying to get medically cleared, but I don't know I don't know how they see her. The match was a little rough between her and Nia Jax, but I am interested to see how Sasha and Ronda coordinate with one another, and I liked that Sasha came out and kind of got into, for lack of a better term, heel Sasha in terms of, yeah, I'm going to be the first one to defeat you. I like baby faces that aren't just, you know, respectful, but, you know, they have pride in their own work, and they're not going to take any guff from another alpha baby face on the roster.
So I was down with edgy babyface Sasha right up until she used the word bitch, and it's not for the obscenity reasons per se. It's that I felt like there was no value added to that exchange at all, and it felt really unnatural when Nia tried to fire back. And so, like, if you can't actually get value added out of the profanities, then don't use them. Like, there's no point.
It starts to circle that misogynist type of writing. And you find, wait, that all women are just going to call each other bitch and pull their hair and stuff like that. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I'm going to be intrigued by the build because I did not see that one coming. I thought she was going to name Natty at first, and I was like, whoa, okay, cool. And speaking of rules, I hated the ending to that, to the Falls Count Anywhere between Seth and Dean.
I like it only because it pays off the fighting at the beginning of the show between Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley. And so enough had happened through the duration of the show that you had forgotten about this seed that was planted at the top of the show. So in terms of planting a seed and then executing on that seed later, I applaud them because WWE, especially on Raw, has not been diligent about doing that in a very long time. So it was good to see that done. It didn't necessarily make my heart sing or anything, though.
But where was his friends? Where was Seth's friends? That's the thing that
the
kills
brawl.
Me
the
about
brawl
this.
Should have restarted. No, I'm with you. So the brawl should have restarted once again, and then that's how the show goes off the air. We've run out of time.
Yeah, but you know what? To circle back to the beginning, it's funny because all I could think of was we always complain when they do a chaos angle that they don't show us actual chaos. I would have loved if this brawl between all these guys had lasted the entire show and they could never get them in the ring for actual matches and stuff, but I liked the aspect of at least a little bit of controlled chaos for a while.
And I would be fine with them going, oh, we've run out of time. I don't want them to do that all the time, but like,
yeah.
That would have been a really good scenario to have the brawl just end with everyone fighting, and we're now
that's
out of time.
Staple, that's a staple of territory wrestling. The we'll keep our cameras rolling in case anything happens, folks, and we'll show you next week. You know, the hard sell for the next show. I would love them to hard sell me to watch next week. They don't do that anymore in Raw. Everything kind of wraps up, and they have cliffhangers occasionally. You know, like, what does this mean for so-and-so? But most of them end on a fairly solid note without a lot of build, because you know you're pretty much going to get the same thing next week.
Yeah, there's a way to pay off the seed that you planted at the start of the show without wrapping things up, too. So to that, in this case, it's you can have the Bobby Lashley attack, like, oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that. A lot's happened since 3 hours ago. And then everyone's brawling once again, and then we're out of here. And I think that's a more satisfying ending than actually having Lashley. I'm with you, because now we're back to stupid babyface syndrome.
Oh, we're going to get plenty of that in SmackDown. But other stuff on Raw, there was just the Elias Baron Corbin thing. What other matches am I missing?
I have nothing to say about Elias and Baron Corbin.
Neither do I.
Yeah.
Were there any other matches on the show? Or
I do not believe that there were. Let me double check. Oh, there was Ember Moon and Apollo Crews. You got anything on that?
I think Alicia Fox did the best sell job for the Eclipse.
Oh, Alicia's always entertaining. I mean,
Alicia
she's kind of doing nothing,
crazy.
But she's so fun.
Yeah, I wish they'd break up this team, but I know what it is. I am, again, I think mixed match stuff is going to become the norm rather than just a special thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where we're going.
Yeah, it feels like it.
It creates a new division. Don't be surprised if you see mixed match tag titles.
Oh, God, no.
Mm.
No, don't do that to me, Chris, because it's an excuse to get people on the show, but we're just going to be introducing women's tag titles and now mixed tag titles. This is going to be NWA 84, where everybody has a title.
This is a company with a really large roster where you have to have storylines, and the way you kind of do storylines in this company is everyone's fighting for belts, and when there's not enough belts, then you have like roster glut, and we see that in other divisions.
maybe not belts, but I do like things like if you win the mixed match challenge, you get number 30 in the Rumble. I thought that was clever.
I think so. I mean, I think that that's given R-Truth a nice little storyline to keep him going all the way to Royal Rumble. This is a storyline that he can kind of weave week by week through.
Chris, I'm going to tell you something.
Oh, no.
Environmentalists are always the heels. Two of the biggest movies this year, this past year, Environmentalists, the heels. And here's Daniel Bryan complaining about, look, I went to Survivor Series in NXT at Staples Center. I am no longer allowed. I got a giant depth charge sized beverage. I can't get a top to it, and I can't get a plastic straw for it. This is a recipe for disaster. If someone can solve this problem without paper straws or something, they will become the biggest babyface in my life ever. Because spills abounded, let me put it that way, at the Staples Center, because people were not used to having to handle beverages in this way. So there were a lot of people spilling beverages over Survivor Series weekend. Daniel Bryan is wrong. I don't care what he says. He's not saving the environment. He's just making people very, very angry about plastic straws. But I liked the promo. I liked everything they shot about that. I think Vince likes the word impotent. That was his word of the week in whatever word of the day calendar he has in his airplane or something.
He must have seen something, or somebody said the word impotent recently. He was like, ha ha ha, impotent. Yes. I mean, I like it. It's fine. I think that this new Daniel Bryan character doesn't actually need any of the eco-terrorist stuff to get off the ground.
I think it's making him very mid-cardy.
Yeah, I think he could just be a lunatic and be a main event character. And the promo that he did later on in the show where he was just yelling just at the top of his lungs, I was like, yes, I'm into that. Because that to me is a main event level heel. He's a maniac. He's self-obsessed. He's deluded. That is a heel. Absolutely. The eco stuff, it's just, yeah, mid-cardy is the right way to describe it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the people on the outside and the concession stands, and I liked the idea. I liked the presentation, too. The presentation, I thought, was fairly solid. I'd much rather be a lunatic about keeping the title than being a lunatic about saving the world. I think that's my disconnect there.
Yeah, yeah. Or if he had much more of a direct lineage to saving the world is saving the title. That the title is the world.
Or having more of a savior complex, even.
Yeah.
Not in terms of the CM Punk straight edge society thing where he wanted to be a messiah or something like that.
No, like, I'm saving this company, I'm saving wrestling, saving the dignity of this belt, like, you all should be thanking me. I'm making there's a way for him to be doing the I'm making the world a better place angle without it being about carbon emission.
Yeah. I think that's just stuff that
that's him not being able to transcend his own political hang-ups, and it's actually dragging down a character that could be stronger.
Although I'm saying, plastic straws, bring them back. That's all I want. I want a plastic straw, Chris, and a plastic top for my beverage. Please. I spilled a 32-ounce Coke on myself.
Oh, I hope that turtle chokes.
You know, it's a turtle.
Right.
My comfort over my Diet Coke.
No, I know. That stand might never come out. You're right. I feel for you.
Speaking of stupid baby face syndrome, so Mandy Rose wore a towel all the way from the hotel to the arena.
God. makes me want to peel off my face. I'm so checked out on this Mandy Rose. And actually, the beatdown thing, easily the stupidest thing of the week, where you have Sonya Deville pummeling Naomi repeatedly in the stomach in this 2-on-1 thing, and Naomi's not keeping up in a convincing way at all. So, like, there's no reason why Rose and Deville shouldn't have gotten the better of Naomi almost immediately. That whole thing was weak. Jimmy's reaction was weak in the back. I did not like any of this at all whatsoever.
Yeah, it's mildly uncomfortable for me to watch this. I think there's a way to do these types of storylines, and this is the kind of way you do the storyline in 1996. It's not the way you should be doing the storyline in 2018. Or even 2019. Thank you. Get the year right, stupid.
It wouldn't have been a good way to do it last year, though, either.
No. It needs a little bit more forethought, a little bit more planning out, a little bit more, even, you know, one week we see in the beginning Sonya and Mandy going, look, we need to get an edge in this division. Who can we pick on that has a weak spot? Oh, it's Naomi. Oh, I got a way to do that. And then you kind of get the wheels turning. The sex pot gimmick is fine. I have no problem with that. It was just, towel, huh? And then it gets kicked off the apron, and you're just like, oh my God. Stupid babyface syndrome has come in after a nice hard-hitting tag match, and I was kind of enjoying that match.
Yeah, I was kind of enjoying that match, even though that pairing is just not fresh for me at all. After we got through that threshold for me, I was like, but they're having a good match again because I do like them. It's just they're not fresh. They're a good pairing, though. This isn't selling for me. This isn't working for me.
No, I kind of liked it when they were splitting up a little bit more, Mandy and Sonya.
Yes, I was
to see
more.
What they would be doing.
I mean, that's the other thing is with Mandy as a sex pod, it really leaves Sonya as just a second. And I was more interested in seeing Mandy and Sonya kind of go their own ways and becoming their own characters a little bit more.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Although with the Usos losing, it appears we are getting a tag team title match between the Daddy's Issues team of Miz and Shane McMahon versus The Bar. I'm finding Miz's flakiness endearing in this whole thing.
There's a hapless boobery about him that is fun. And he's still delusional, but he is delusional in a way, like, for a cause that is, like, at least somewhat noble here, and Shane is going along with it. And even when The Miz went out, he managed to straddle the line of still staying consistent to The Miz character, who is a self-obsessed dork, but also, like, accomplishing a babyface goal and accomplishing getting, like, babyface sympathy by getting beat up by The Bar. I liked all of this.
I think it's a 50-50 feud, but I really liked the fact that Cien Almas got the pinfall on Rey in that tag match with AJ and Mustafa Ali versus him and Joe. I thought everybody kind of came off the way they should have come off here. I think Joe came off as a badass. Mustafa Ali had some great moves. I think the crowd wanted the face win, but I think it was better for them to give the heels a little shine. And I liked that they reestablished Almas as kind of a badass in a way, letting him hit his finisher. Rey took I mean, Almas took that reverse hurricanrana on the head actually it was almost a Canadian destroyer, wasn't it? That he took?
He took a good Canadian destroyer.
Because Corey called it a pile driver.
No.
I was shocked that made air. I was like, That term is not allowed on WWE television for the most part, unless you put the term tombstone ahead of it, and it's Kane or The Undertaker doing it. So I was surprised that got through. But I liked that Ray took the fall here, and I liked.
I bet you Graves was not wanting to call it a Canadian destroyer. I think he was just trying to dodge that and called it a pile driver instead.
That's true. That's very, very true. I like this. What do you think?
I came around on this. I mean, Ray's not someone who necessarily rocks my world, but yeah, when I saw a Canadian destroyer on my television screen, I was like, oh, okay, all right.
Well, I was glad he was the one that took the fall, because I thought for sure Mustafa Ali was going to.
Yes, yeah. No, I think that's good, too. No, I think that Mustafa Ali is getting settled in nicely on this roster here, and I'm interested in seeing how this feud ends up shaking out with him and Joe.
Yeah, I'm Joe is one of those guys, man, that I think every time they build him up big, they never really go that next step.
That's the problem. I mean, it's not – this match actually has the potential of being a very, very good match and like kind of a sleeper match, because people are not going to necessarily be expecting that from Joe on the main roster. If you were watching him on NXT, it was a little bit different. But this main roster run, I mean, they refused to put the belt on him for one, right? Like, I mean, that's a big problem. He should have had a big, long, sustaining belt run so that he really comes off as a menace, because his theme song really has a mood of menace about it, but we don't know, as main roster viewers, we don't know enough about this guy as to why this guy's such a menace.
I won't say I liked. I'm intrigued, at least, by Rusev and Nakamura. Because I liked that Rusev turned off the charming stuff and basically said, I'm going to break every bone in your body because that's my wife. And I really like that Nakamura is kind of playing the, I'm not really the bad guy here. Your wife brought this on himself card. I like the notion of a bad guy who thinks he's justified.
Right. They were denying his own agency and the whole interaction. That, like, I mean, because the whole way that Nakamura's version of events even gets off of the ground is that you ignore the initial conceit of Nakamura brought himself into the ring to interrupt this promo in the first place.
Yeah, I dug that. I'm all for this feud. I'm not gonna say it's gonna be a classic in any ways, but I think both guys are guys that need something to keep them.
I'm still not all the way on the Rusev as babyface character. Like there's something missing from this.
He's a little too in on the joke.
Yes. The weird self-referential lines of, like, yes, how I have a body like an Adonis and that sort of thing. I mean, like, that's supposed to be funny, but I need him to be a bit more of an airhead. That's not exactly happening. Like, really, what should be happening is he's the bronze and she's the beauty and the brains. Like, that should be their marriage dynamic.
That feels like, you know what that feels like? It feels like a Vince director's note or something. Like, it's like, well, you're really ugly. Call yourself beautiful all the time.
Right.
That feels like to me.
I want him almost, like, kind of like Rusev 1.0. I want him to be the crush guy. Like the crush guy who also wants to be a good husband, but like those are his two kind of defining personality traits. A little bit of a goofy guy, a little bit of an airhead, but good heart and likes to crush stuff.
Yep, I'm for that too. Let's see, the only other thing I can think of is we had a women's number one contender match for the SmackDown women's title match at Royal Rumble. Becky Lynch, Charlotte, and Carmella. I really liked this match.
Yeah, this is a good match.
I thought
Carmella
held her own, too.
Yes.
I know people want to dismiss Carmella a lot. I think she played her role perfect in this match.
This week was really good for both R-Truth and Carmella, I thought. I thought that R-Truth, opening up by attacking Daniel Bryan made him look real strong, and even though you didn't think that he was going to beat Daniel Bryan, I thought he left that match feeling stronger than when he came into that match, and I felt the same way with Carmella. They were on similar arcs, too. You were talking about them not just liking to have fun, but also taking this seriously. And Carmella did a lot in her promos to rehabilitate herself, and she's usually pretty good on the mic.
I'm gonna go back a bit. I think the fact that commentary put over R-Truth as being justified in attacking Daniel Bryan,
that helped
Christmas
a lot.
Beatdown
that
helped
a lot.
Hell of a lot for R-Truth right there. I liked that little note. I liked that they just kind of moved out of the way for Charlotte's moonsault on the outside. Charlotte just kicked her or something. I thought that was a cool little touch, as opposed to, you know what, there's not a lot of women who are going to be catching Charlotte on the outside. Why even pretend? Just move out of the way and let her land on her feet out there. I find the choice of Becky interesting. Because I still think the money in this whole thing is Becky winning that Women's Rumble, and I still think she might. I think she loses the title match and enters the Rumble. I still think that's where her story is told rather than having her beat Asuka. But I also really liked and it's obvious that Asuka or her said something to the other that made them laugh. Because her corpsing during the stare down, it was endearing. I'm not sure it was the message they wanted to get across, but I still liked the stare down where Asuka, who is always entertaining, just jawing and looking angry, and Becky at the end of the show. I really dug that too.
No, I like this. I think you're dead on. I don't think the money is in getting the belt back on Becky right now. I think the money is keeping her in the chase, so that she can eventually cross paths with Ronda. And, I mean, like, that's really, like, that's the final destination for Becky. The belt is just a means to get there.
Yeah, no, just some good timing on the kicks by Carmella. I still like the code of silence when she sticks that thing in because it looks vicious as hell.
Yeah, it's a good-looking move. Yes.
Charlotte was great, too. I mean, everybody here clicked. I thought this was a fun show. Again, I think both shows were pretty fun. A little clunky in the angles, but both good shows.
So the one thing I would have done different in the finish is I actually would have had Becky tap out Charlotte, because I want to plant the seed of why Charlotte is going to turn heel on everybody. Like, Charlotte needs to have a few defining losses before she goes full heel.
You know what? I was intrigued by that as well. I thought it was a little too easy to have Carmella be the one to tap. But at the same time, I thought that there's a chance that they're going to move over Charlotte to face Ronda eventually, so they don't want to beat her just yet, too. But yeah, no, I agree with you on that point. I do think I think tapping out Charlotte would have done wonders, and I don't think Charlotte would have been hurt by that.
Yeah, and I don't think Carmella is strong enough. Like if you wanted to do the whole rehabilitation angle thing with Carmella, it sounds minor, but not having her tap out tonight, I think, would have helped a lot to keep her at the level you built her up to tonight.
I thought they were going to save her. I thought they were going to save her on that one. I think she tapped out a bit too quick, to be honest with you. I would have liked to have seen her struggle a little bit more if she was going to be the one to tap out. I agree with you on that one. I think, and I wasn't sure. I thought originally the point you were going to make here was that beating Carmella is not, how do I put it? It's not a tough enough foe to help really propel Becky into that kind of program. Beating Charlotte as a strong win, even in a three-way, would have been a nice rocket on this program with Asuka.
That's the other side of it, is you need to get Carmella up to a certain level of credibility, and she's not there yet. And so she's not a jobber, but like in the context of this roster, she is. She's the jobber to the stars, sure.
You can follow me at Crap Game 13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. You can follow Chris Novembrino at ChrisNovembrino. You can join our Patreon, patreon.com/ShakeThemRopes. Coming up on the second show this week, Chris, we have a preview we have to do for NXT UK's first takeover.
I will be watching that, and we will be breaking down that as well as all of the action on 205 Live and NXT US. So make sure you check that out in the second part of the week. And you can find my other show.
There we go.
At I was segueing. You guys just let me, do my thing here.
I was going to feed you. I was trying to be supportive.
Oh, you're turning me into one of those feeders, huh? Okay. I've seen this on YouTube. I know how these stories end. It's horrible. You can find my other show at don'tworry.tv. Don't Worry About the Government is also available on iTunes and Stitcher. We got two new episodes out. One's out already. Another one will be out probably in the next 24 hours, probably around the time you're hearing this. So get onto iTunes and Stitcher and check out Don't Worry About the Government today.
Don't go licking any doorbells.
Now, Tessa, what I'm going to do, I promise I love you so much. I wrote you a little poem, Tessa, and I memorized it. Roses are red, violets are blue. Tessa, I love you. I love you, baby. Come back to me. I'm going to beat you to death next week, Bill Dundee.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.